Hi, we're back, and we're going to talk about Windows 8.1 development with my guests, Ryan, Uni, and Tim. And before we begin, why don't you guys introduce yourselves, then we'll dive in to this exciting topic.
Cool. My name is Ryan J. Salva. I'm a PM over on VS Client Tools, working primarily with HTML tools, diagnostics, Blend, a little bit of the F12 development tools over in IE, just all around taking good care of that.
Awesome.
Cool. I'm Uni Ravindranathan. I'm a program manager working on Visual Studio, and I primarily focus on XAML tools, so things like Blend and the designers in VS, templates, build system, anything that's to do with XAML development for WPF, Silverlight, Windows Phone, all of those platforms.
Excellent.
And I'm Tim Heuer. I'm one of the program managers on the Windows UI platform team, which owns the WinRT XAML platform as well as WPF.
All right. Excellent. So get your questions in. Uni, in the when I did the IDE segment with Kathy and David, there was a question that came in asking about enhancements for WPF, and all three of us at the same time spaced on that one, forgetting, of course, that there are enhancements to the XAML designer that apply to WPF as well as the others. So why don't you talk a little bit about that, and I apologize for not remembering that.
Oh, absolutely. So we did a ton of work in this release for all of the XAML platforms, WPF being one of them. So we did a lot of work in terms of just the fundamentals, making the designer more stable and reliable. We did a lot of work there, but lots of new features as well. So things like the XAML editor in VS has a ton of new features, like be that better IntelliSense features for data binding and resources, just basic things like commenting support and code snippets. So we did a lot of work in the VS XAML editor. Or in Blend, we added a lot of features that allow you to create user experiences that are pixel perfect. So we added a feature for rulers and guides that allows you to sort of lay out content across multiple layout containers much more better way and so on and so forth. Similarly, we added improvements to the style and template editing experience. So all of these things that we did for all of the XAML platforms, I think I'm really excited by the new advances in VS 2013.
Okay, and one of my favorite ones on the XAML side is go to definition now in your XAML code. So you could have something that relies on a resource, you F12 or right click on that and go to definition. So you'll go to where that is in the XAML, and you can, if that's based on something else, you can go to definition on that and then dive down and
absolutely. I mean, we find a lot of developers sort of navigating back and forth between their code, view models, whatever it's called, and their XAML. Mm-hmm. So we tried to do go to definition everywhere, so you could hit go to definition in any tag, and we would take you to either the XAML file that contains that particular tag, if it's a style, or the code behind, if it is essentially a binding or a view model object. So we tried to implement go to definition everywhere in the editor.
IntelliSense will show you resources, will give you code completion on resources if they're defined in the files. So there's lots of cool stuff. And as you said, that applies to just XAML development everywhere.
Absolutely.
But what are some of the things that are specific to Windows 8.1 development that are new?
I'd let Tim sort of go first, because he can sort of talk about some of the platform enhancements. I mean, our job at Visual Studio is just to make the platform shine. So we'll start with Tim, and then I'll sort of talk about some of the tooling improvements as well.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think in Windows 8.1, from a platform perspective, in the UI platform, which is for store development, both XAML and JavaScript, and our team owns the WinJS platform as well. We did, if I could bucket it into a couple themes, it would probably be performance and more controls to unique UI experiences. On both the JavaScript side and the XAML side, we focused a lot on some performance scenarios. So we've improved performance and list scenarios on both of those platforms, in WinJS and the XAML framework, through exposing more lower level control. We did a ton of tuning in the platform, so we improved binding and in areas around upwards of 40%, we saw some binding performance improvements, but also built on top of those layers for kind of large list support and giving developers lower level controls as where things render at what times and things. And similarly, the list view in WinJS as well made not the exact same improvements, but improvements in that area around list performance. And then on the other side, on the UI side, we did some new controls. So for XAML specifically, we had some gaps that we needed to fill from Windows 8, and we believe we've closed almost all those gaps, or maybe a couple lower priority ones that we can still look to the community to fill. But we also introduced some new ones, so things like the hub control is probably the one that we'll, you hear talked about a little bit most, which is very similar and analogous to the Panorama experience on the phone platform. And so that was delivered in both JavaScript as well as XAML. And WinJS also added a navigation bar control. So if you use any of the Bing apps that are included in the box, that kind of top app bar experience of top-level navigation, if you're a JavaScript developer, you can take advantage of that as well. So.
Yeah, and just to touch on that, like, I mean, the beauty of the thing is anything that they did sort of shows off in Visual Studio as well. So we did a lot of work to enhance those experiences. So both across HTML and XAML, we added support for, you know, controls that the platform added, like hub or whatever it is. Like, we made the design experience for these controls really good. One of the coolest things about the Windows 8.1 platform is developers, by just retargeting, they don't even need to change a single line of code, their apps are performing out of the box, right? So there's a lot of work we did, for example, to compile your XAML to XPF and things like that, to just get you performance out of the box without writing a single line of code. Mm-hmm. And like Tim said, if you wanted to sort of take that to the next level and adapt to some of the new APIs and functionality that the platform provides, your apps can be really fast and fluid.
Yeah. Yeah. I think above and beyond that is also just enhancing the amount of tools available to kind of monitor and diagnose those performance problems where they do occur, right? So providing tools within both Visual Studio and the F12 tools when you kind of get out of Windows Store development, so that you can actually gain greater transparency into what calls, what exact, you know, animations or whatnot are bringing you to a place where you've got a frame rate that's below target, or your memory consumption is out of control, or even your battery life. It's just draining your battery life. And, you know, particularly as you're starting to develop for mobile devices, that becomes really, really important as you sort of strive to increase the longevity and the kind of the user's experience, not just of your application, but of, you know, the entire ecosystem of applications that happen there on the device and on Windows 8.1.
Right. So speaking about the frame rate, explain to people when you build a XAML Windows Store app and you run it, there are numbers that appear at runtime that may confuse people as to what those are.
Yeah, by default, if you're using Visual Studio, which we hope everybody is, of course, we have a conditional compile statement in the templates, in every one of the templates. That's if you're in debug, we set the property in the framework that says enable frame rate counter is true. And so when you're running, you'll see numbers on both the upper left and upper right side of the screen. There's two numbers on each side. The right side of the screen is actually system-wide. So a lot of people get confused. They'll toggle away from their app, and they'll still see the frame rate counter while VS is running. Mm-hmm. And that's actually a system-wide DWM or Windows management kind of information there. So that's, as long as the debugger is still attached, you're seeing that across the system. But the left side, I think, is what most people look at, and that's the UI frame rate and, the frame rate on the UI as well as the render thread counts there.
Okay.
And so, you know, you want to, if you're doing a lot of animations and things, you want to, you know, the ideal is 60. Like, that's the golden, the magic number there. But it helps, you know, it helps diagnose things a little bit better. And we wanted to turn that on by default. It's, you know, it's kind of one of these esoteric features that if you don't know where to look, you don't know how to turn these things on. There's another one that we don't turn on because it actually changes your UI, which is the heat map or the overdraw regions. And you would lose what your UI is actually showing, but it will turn things red tints of where you have a lot of what we call overdraw. And so if you have a lot of UI elements that are stacked on top of each other, the darker the color, the worse situation you're in, which impacts some of those other numbers.
So how do you turn that on?
I think it's enable overdraw regions, I think, is the actual API. Yeah, exactly. But it's the same place where you set the frame rate counter. We have a static class called debug settings where you turn some of those on.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of cool.
And I look at, like, you know, to Ryan's point, like, one of the coolest demos that I saw about, like, the F12 tools was, I think it was Jonathan Carter showed this to me, taking an HTML app was doing, like, a lot of DOM manipulation, like, kind of almost like a repeater scenario of adding things, but using the DOM to manipulate, and it was slow, and the F12 tools, like, showed immediately, like, this call was, you know, happening multiple times, he was able to tweak and say, wow, just setting this, building up a string and setting inner HTML once, like dropped like 4 seconds out of the render time or something like this.
Yeah, just
immense
knowing
list.
That, a clone node is maybe a little bit less efficient than an HTML write, and then being able to see that that exact line is what really calls
the tool,
it.
The tool's clearly pointed to like, almost like a heat map kind of view of like, wow, I should probably go look in this area.
Yeah. And like the great thing is that's available not just in the F12 tools, but also as you come into and you're doing Windows Store analysis. Yeah. We've brought all of those same tools, whether you are using JavaScript HTML as a language for web development or for Windows Store development. Like, in the end, it's the same language. The performance is exactly the same. And the developer experience should be exactly the same, too. You should have, all of that goodness, consistent, clear, all of the tools kind of really readily available to you. So, yeah.
Okay, so a question about Blend. Has the, there's a lot I can do in Visual Studio. I can also go over into Blend. There's some overlap. So where would you tell people as a general rule of thumb, when can they stay in Visual Studio? When should they look to going to Blend? It's kind of a general rule of thumb.
It might be a little bit different for HTML and XAML. I mean, I can answer for the HTML side of things. Mm-hmm. Really, if you are occupied primarily with kind of, I'll call it the logic layer of your application, right? Really what that means is if you are occupied with problems around JavaScript, coding JavaScript, debugging, really kind of creating the functionality of your application, spend your time in Visual Studio. There's great debugging tools there. There's the best IntelliSense possible. Your experience there is going to be premium. When you are ready to transition over to UI development, sort of the production of visuals, mm-hmm. whether that be through CSS styling, whether that be through HTML construction and attribute setting and things like that. When you're looking to maybe even build out some of your WinJS controls, and maybe you're not terribly familiar with what all of the different properties are that you can set on those WinJS controls, that's your opportunity to move over to Blend, where you're going to get the best immediate visual feedback for all of your changes. In Visual Studio, by design, really, it's a code-focused, code-centric type of environment. Mm-hmm. But when you need that kind of instant visual feedback that says, oh, when I set the CSS property to opacity of 0.8, or I set a transform, well, how do I translate that number into an actual impact on my front-end UI? Blend's there to kind of provide that tight iterative loop as you go through changing individual properties and whatnot. So that'd be my advice there. I don't know. What do you think, for XAML?
I mean, people who have been following the history of Blend in Visual Studio 2012, we sort of took the Blend designer, brought it into Visual Studio. But our ultimate goal is to tighten the loop between these two tools so people can sort of work seamlessly in their design-focused activities or their code-focused activities, right? There are people who sort of prefer to edit their XAML or HTML by hand. There are people who try to do that visually. So our goal is to sort of make it really seamless to sort of interoperate between these two activities that you do.
And to that point, there's no reason why you couldn't, let's say you've got two monitors up like so many of us do, have Visual Studio and Blend open on either monitor. Mm-hmm. They're talking to each other back and forth the whole time. So if you make edits in Blend, they're going to show up in Visual Studio and vice versa. They are meant to be complementary tools, and that's why it's Blend for Visual Studio, right? It's all part of one package.
Okay, so answer a few questions now. Azure asks, my question is about improvements in JS and AJAX IntelliSense.
Improvements in AJAX and AJAX and JS IntelliSense.
Yes.
So I did not participate directly in the IntelliSense feature. I can tell you that some of the things that I've noticed as I've kind of walked around and worked on some of my own apps, I think what we actually do is we kind of run the app in the background a little bit. And so you do get prompting for your own variables and the own objects that you've created as you're typing along. So if I've got my object.property, mm-hmm. I can do my object dot and get a list of the properties and methods off of that. I would say that there is definitely a blog post on MSDN about it. So I would kind of look it up there.
Okay.
I don't know, Tim, do you know any other stuff that got added in there?
I don't. I'm trying to think of how, you know, some of the referencing, you know, pulling in third-party libraries. I felt like I remember there's some improvements there, you know, when you start bringing in like jQuery or Knockout, you know, we've enhanced the experience of just getting some IntelliSense in those experiences, I feel. As well.
One feature that I have had a lot of, that has come in very useful for me is also as I come into different variables or object properties, names, whatnot, you do get some nice little highlighting everywhere that object or variable appears.
Okay.
And then there is I forget what the command is called, but it basically allows you to refactor everywhere kind of thing. So right click and I think it's like rename property or I forget the name of it.
Right.
But then you can instantly, you know, as you get more descriptive of your object model,
mm-hmm.
Instantly kind of refactor throughout.
Okay.
So yeah, that's one of the things I like.
All right. So Dan has a question about refactoring. Will code refactoring in code behind update the XAML files as well now, and vice versa? Is refactoring XAMLable now possible?
I think to be super honest with you, we did not invest heavily in the space in this release. There is some refactoring that happens when you refactor your code behind and we update. For example, if you rename your class,
mm-hmm.
we update your X:: class in your XAML files. That said, refactoring capabilities in Visual Studio is something that we are super excited about. Rosslyn is something that we are looking at very closely as well. So not in this release, but something that we are super interested in sort of bringing to the table.
Okay. Zippy asks, are there any improvements for creating MVVM-based applications?
I'm guessing he's talking about the XAML scenario, or he or she.
Well, either way. As we know, MVVM is not just for XAML developers.
Okay, makes total sense. I'll speak in the context of XAML development today for a second. What we tried to do with some of the work we did for IntelliSense and things like that, with, for example, Go to Definition, we wanted to make it easy for people to build model-separated apps and then sort of like seamlessly transition mm-hmm. back and forth. We have added new data capabilities to sort of preview your model-separated data structures correctly in the design surface, write IntelliSense against those data structures and things like that. So there are lots of popular frameworks out there. Everyone uses Visual Studio to write against these frameworks. We haven't sort of picked a particular framework or a pattern. We've tried to sort of strike the middle ground between enabling a variety of approaches, be that Prism or MVVM Lite, right. whatever is the approach that people sort of pick out there. So that said, you know, we do have features that we hope will help people build such apps and still be more productive in VS 2013 than they could ever be.
Okay.
I feel like that was a softball that you missed. Behaviors.
Oh, there we go. Like, yeah, exactly. Behaviors is an addition that we added to Windows Store apps, and since we're talking about Windows Store today, that's a capability that people actually use pretty a lot for primarily MVVM scenarios.
Right.
We have things like, invoke command action and call method action, which allow you to, without writing a single line of code, declaratively, you know, invoke commands and methods on your view models and models. So yes, absolutely, we have made additional investments in sort of enabling a large number of frameworks and scenarios using some of the tools that we have.
I want to kind of put an exclamation point on that. Those improvements are not just on the XAML side from an MVVM perspective, but also from an HTML perspective as
right.
well. So we did add the JavaScript equivalent of behaviors, and then we also made some improvements, particularly on the blend side of the house, with data binding, giving you a little bit more transparency into your data context for a selected sort of object node mm-hmm. Or DOM node. And any of those, the behaviors can be accessed just via drag and drop from the toolbox or the assets pane onto an object or via the attributes pane as well. All of the data binding gets exposed primarily through what we call the property marker, which is essentially just the tiny little square button that's adjacent to all attribute and property
right.
value editors.
Okay.
Some really good stuff there.
And then I have noticed, particularly in the past 2 or 3 weeks, that there have been a number of MVVM templates that have appeared in the Visual Studio Gallery. So you can check those out.
Yep.
All right, Bryce asks, is there a plan to include features for building and checking accessibility in apps?
This is something actually we did discuss this in for Windows 8.1 couldn't get to it in this release, but one I'll share what our thoughts were around this. Some of our thoughts were as simple as like FXCOP style rules that you could opt into and kind of inspect your tree, and you'd see, you know, because one of the big things about accessibility is making sure that Narrator and these assistive technologies can understand what the screen is mm-hmm. happening. And so a lot of that is anything that is on the screen should be descriptive of what it is. So, you know, we thought about like an FXCOP style approach that maybe we could scan your tree and look at what UI elements do not have accessible names or things like that. We didn't get to it. It's actually, you know, we were planning on using the existing framework for FXCOP to do that. It's something that's totally doable today, mm-hmm. Just, you know, a time thing for us. The other thing that from a framework approach that we took is making sure that a lot of what we deliver is accessible by default. That's a big thing. You know, we see a lot of developers like don't take that extra mile to think about this class of users. And we need to do it better as a framework to make sure that everything that you put in your UI is accessible by default.
And it's costly too.
It's costly.
To think about that, right? So if it's baked into the platform and it's accessible from the get-go, that's one less sort of thing that you got to put on your checklist.
Okay. And I think I can give you a for instance of what we did in XAML. We introduced new app bar buttons as one of kind of the gaps that we filled. And there's a label property there. You know, you said a visual, and what the label is, play, stop, whatever. So by default, when you do that, by you just setting that label property, we're plumbing that through to the accessible name. So you can optionally override that, but that's, you know, a simple example of what we need to do more as a framework of making those by default.
Right.
From a tooling perspective, you know, when you look at, when you drag things from Blend in HTML for Blend, you'll see that ARIA properties are kind of like injected in there to kind of either do the work for you or also to hint like, hey, you should go set some of these things. And for those who don't know, ARIA is the standard for doing accessible kind of names there. So
all right, so we're
something we're definitely thinking about.
We're up against our time, but I'm gonna ask two quick questions and I want quick answers. David's question, how can I view .cshtml in design mode?
.cshtml?
Yes.
I don't think I know what .cshtml is.
I think it's an ASP.NET scenario, so if there is a session on ASP.NET, we should definitely differ.
All right. And Lena asks, does Blend 2013 support HTML5 CSS web development instead of app development?
So it is only HTML that we display on the design surface. So theoretically, you could do web development, but it is not optimized for web development.
Right.
That is one of our most requested features, though, and so be sure it's something that we're thinking very carefully about.
All right. Okay, so we're out of time. Thank you guys very much for coming on.
Totally.
And up next is .NET development. Dan and Habib will be here.